Kathy Rodriguez. Join me and co-host Chico Alvarez for a concert benefiting WBAI and saluting the life, legend, and music of El Rey Tito Puente, Friday, November 10th at 9 p.m. This celebration takes place at the Latin Quarter, located at 96th Street and Broadway, and will feature the Tito Puente Orchestra. Special invited guests include the son of Latin music, Eddie Palmieri, and New York's premier charanga band, Los Jóvenes del Barrio, featuring Johnny Almendra and Jillian. So join us in this celebration of Latin music's leading ambassador, Tito Puente, Friday, November 10th at 9 p.m. at the Latin Quarter, 96th Street and Broadway. Tickets are $35, and for more information and tickets, call 212-255-4834. That's 212-255-4834.
Eight p.m. here on radio station WBAI in New York, which means it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. Cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get my sweat.
That's right. It's yet another edition of Off the Hook here on radio station WBAI. Good morning, Isaac.
Oh, good. Wait a second.
Whatever. Just play along.
Okay.
How you doing?
You had your cup of coffee yet? Or?
No, I don't drink coffee. I'm not a coffee type, unless I'm in desperate straits. And Mike is here, too, right from Columbia, the college, not the country, which in some ways is a country of itself. And we've had a very interesting week, as always.
It's been long.
Frustrating week in some ways. Well, let's start with the really interesting stuff first. The interesting thing being that finally met eye to eye, face to face, eyeball to eyeball with Jack Valente, head of the MPAA.
The guy you make t-shirts out of.
Yeah. Well, I don't make t-shirts out of him.
I'm sorry.
T-shirts
you
with
put
his...
pictures of his face
exactly,
on your t-shirts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're quite popular, in fact.
Is he as tall as you?
He's about... I don't want to get into, you know, height...
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you wouldn't have met him eye to eye.
I'll just say he's not as tall as me. No, he's not.
So you have to, like, crouch down to meet him eye to eye.
Look, I'm not going to say things like that because I've got so many other things on my side. I don't need to say things like that, all right?
I'm just curious.
It was definitely fascinating. Fascinating situation to be in. I found out about it. Well, okay, there are several parts of this story. And to really understand why we didn't tell anybody about this, you have to understand that we didn't have any net access for 5 days. And that's a whole story in and of itself, which I'll get into afterwards. But let's just make that a given, that we didn't have any net access for 5 days. So we couldn't tell anybody that, Jack Valente was appearing at Harvard University in this debate. A real debate. Not the kind of debate that's going on tonight up in the same city, Boston.
The joint press conference.
Yeah, tonight, it's unbelievable. This was a real debate. And Jack Valente was actually going to be spouting forth and saying... you know, things that he believed in. And, you know, this was a chance for anybody who was there, anybody who was on the net that chose to listen in to ask questions, be heard, just listen to the kinds of things that were being said. And the person on the other side was attorney Larry Lessig, who was, I think, extremely well-spoken on the whole issue of... Well, the topic was the future of intellectual property on the Internet. And... They really went at it for quite a while, but the funny thing was, and this is available on the net right now. In fact, if you go to http://cyber.law.harvard.edu/future of IP, you should see on there a real video production or real audio, maybe, of the whole thing, and you can hear... everything that was said. But some of the things that you'll hear there were Larry Lessig trying to get Jack Valente to explain some of the positions he was coming up with, you know, some of the crazy things he was saying, because he was just saying things like, well, you know, I disagree with you. And
well, that's nice.
Yeah, and
stealing is bad.
It's the things like that. Yeah, but I mean, more controversial things, like, you know, people who read things are thieves, and, you know, just basically things that you do not necessarily understand and need to have explained. And so he would basically counter Larry Lessig's rather, I think, well-prepared remarks of just what intellectual property is and what it is not with, I don't agree with that. And people would ask, well, what do you mean? Well, that's all I'm going to say. I just don't agree. It's customary when you say you don't agree to explain why you don't agree, especially in a debate, but... What are you going to do? Anyway, I got to ask a question. I was the first person to the microphone. In fact, it was quite a...
Oh, I can quite a see all match. The people being pushed away. Yeah.
Well, I sat right next to the microphone. In fact, so all I had to do was pop up and ask my question. My question basically revolved around.
Did you identify yourself?
Or? Yeah, I did. But you know, unbeknownst to me, it seemed like everybody there knew who I was already because they all laughed when I got up to the microphone. Which
Hello.
Was kind of funny. I asked, can you please help me define what a thief is? Because, you know, from this lawsuit that you just won, I was a good sport. I congratulated him on winning. How do you define...
He didn't win yet.
Well, they won the lawsuit. They didn't win the appeal, which is a whole other kettle of fish, which is you know, being cooked right now. You know, from this lawsuit, I thought I understood what a thief was. I thought a thief was, you know, someone who stole something, took something without permission, and profited from it in some way, perhaps. Maybe like the people across the street from the trial who were selling pirated videotapes of films that are in the theater right now. You know, people who are still on that very street corner to this day, not harassed by anybody. You know, I think of those people as thieves. Apparently, they're of no concern to the MPAA because even though they know about them, they're not doing anything to stop it. But it turns out from this lawsuit that a thief is not only somebody who steals, but somebody who writes a program that a thief could use conceivably to steal, even though no one has ever done that yet. It could potentially be used in that manner. That person is a thief, too. And it goes beyond that somebody who reports on the person who wrote the program is also a thief by reporting on it and revealing what the source code says. And beyond that, somebody who links to the person who reports the story. I just wanted to know, where is this going to end? How far are you going to go with this? And you know, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act obviously allows you to do this. So why shouldn't we be scared of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act? And I think what his response to that was, what's the question? So I didn't really get much of an answer from him, but I got a sense that the crowd was behind me.
He knew who you were?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, okay. He knew who I was, all right. You know, when he focuses, you know, you and with a riveting gaze of his, it's pretty frightening. He really, I mean, those eyes can, you could stare down an army with those things, but.
I think he has.
Well, in any way.
It was very interesting because even though he didn't make any sense or have any logical, coherent argument, he was a very good persuasive speaker.
Well, because he'd always like go into something, well, you know, I guess I'm no hound dog lying in the porch on a July afternoon, but I do know one thing. You know, he'd go into these long tangents of, like, you know, good old country boy sayings that didn't make any sense, didn't apply to the situation at all.
But it could sway a lot of people.
I don't think it swayed anybody there.
Not in that room, yeah. But... it could.
Those were intelligent people. Maybe in Congress that worked. In Congress that would work. That would definitely work because those are exactly the kind of people you want to, you know, the constituents, and that kind of thing. It was fun. I'm glad we went up there to check that out. We also saw Ralph Nader. Yeah, Ralph Nader.
He was at the same event?
No, he wasn't at the same event. Yeah. Although it's exactly the kind of thing I'd expect to see him at, but of course he's been pretty busy. He was at Boston Garden, which you may know as the Fleet Center now because they named it after a corporation after they tore down the old one. But I still call it Boston Garden. And he spoke before 12,000 people. Again, you know, this keeps
happening. I never heard of this.
Yeah, I know. It's never in the news. You never hear about this kind of... I mean, for all we know, Pat Buchanan is having rallies of 100,000 people, like, you know, in some forest someplace in the middle of West Virginia. We don't know these things because they're not reported on the news anywhere. But I got to say... Ralph has been getting more publicity lately than I've seen him getting in many weeks, and I think a lot of that has to do with people demanding it, people calling CNN, people calling Fox and saying, you know, we can't ignore the news. Put this guy on. He was on Letterman. He was on Larry King. And I'd like to see what the coverage is like tonight of the so-called debates and what's going on outside. I believe Ralph Nader is outside the debates, not allowed to go inside, and I think Pat Buchanan is there, too. It was weird. I was watching Pat Buchanan last night on Larry King as well. And, you know, he was talking about the debates, and I agreed with everything he said. And that, believe me, that scares me.
Isn't that remarkable?
That scares me. And he was saying that Ralph Nader should be in the debates, and Ralph Nader was saying Pat Buchanan should be in the debates. And, you know, I think opposition is a very important thing to study. You know, when you're on the outside, it doesn't matter who your opponent is. It just matters that you want to be heard. And I think that's the thing that's most important, and we should never forget. People deserve to be heard.
Well, if they're both going to be there, I think they should just debate between each other, like on the steps of the place.
Uh-huh. They should do something. They should do something creative, or you know, some network. I heard some network was going to do this, but backed out or something. That they were going to have Ralph Nader on TV, basically answering whatever question was asked of Bush and Gore. You know,
no, he just answers them at some point. Okay.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool. But anyway, we'd like to invite all of the candidates. Not that any of them are listening now, because of course they're involved with the debates. Otherwise, they would be listening. But we want to know what these candidates have to say about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Now, we pretty much know what Gore is going to say. Gore is going to be for it because, well, everybody in Congress voted for it, and you know, technically, he cast tie-breaking votes. So I'm sure he wouldn't have gone against what everybody else said. I don't think Bush is going to be against it either because he's pretty much in the status quo. But I'd like to know what the alternative candidates have to say about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, a thing that pretty much criminalizes reverse engineering and makes possible such things as the MPAA lawsuit against us and all the other horrible things that are happening right now. The Napster trial started yesterday.
Yes.
And I wasn't expecting it to be the top story on the news everywhere, but it is.
Slow news day.
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of people are following that particular case. I still don't understand what is illegal about Napster itself.
Yeah.
Illegal things can go on.
As an entity of Napster, as in the...
Well, Napster, the program. It's a program, right?
That allows people to share files.
It allows people to share files. Those files can be copyrighted material, but they don't have to be. They can be whatever you want. And Napster doesn't dictate saying that you have to break copyright laws in order to use Napster, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that the quarrel, if there is one, with trading copyrighted material should be with the people that are actually trading copyrighted
engaging
material.
Engaging in that activity, yes.
So I don't understand what the purpose of this whole thing is. I mean, I haven't understood any of these lawsuits that are happening, including the one that against me.
Napster is a big target that they can just point at.
Right, but it's not the right target.
It may be illegal under the DMCA.
Yeah, that's just it. Again, this DMCA rears its head saying that because it facilitates this kind of thing. It's, well, you know, a telephone then is going to become illegal pretty fast. You know, your thought processes and your vocal cords and all that kind of thing. I found this interesting site, greedytv.org. Yeah, they have some ads in various places. It's a combination of people, League of Women Voters, Media Access Project, National Civic League, People for Better TV, Center for Media Education, Civil Rights Forum, Communications Policy, all kinds of other people. Everybody hates political ads except your local television station. This year, TV stations will sell more political ads than fast food ads. They'll make up to $1 billion on democracy. Visit greedytv.org to find out which local stations are profiteering the most on Campaign 2000 and doing the least to inform their viewers about candidates' positions on issues. Or call toll-free 1-866. Ooh, 1-866. Haven't heard one of those yet. 1-866-GREEDY-TV. Because, Isaac...
I think I've heard one more.
The airwaves don't belong to the broadcast industry. They belong to the rest of us. But they do. They do. They really do. And if you don't believe me, try and do a radio show like this in any other radio station in this city and any other radio station in this country. You can't. Except for, you know, some college stations and things like that. All right, now to the problems that we had. A couple of interesting problems, actually. The outage... The net outage. You were there at the end of, actually. You finally...
Well, I wound up in the middle of it, too. But
well, yeah, we were all in the middle of it. But basically, if you go to our website, you'll see pretty much a rundown of the whole saga. Starting last Thursday, when unbeknownst to anybody, for what reason, our connectivity just sort of miraculously disappeared. It's the third time this has happened in a month and a half. And... of course, nobody had any explanation, and Verizon people were dispatched to the site. They couldn't make it there till Friday. And Friday, of course, this is always what happens. We ask them to tell us when they're going to come so we can make sure somebody's there. And then they come before they do that. And they say, nobody's here. We're going to go.
Goodbye.
And then they leave and tell us, we were there, but nobody was there. And they go, of course, you idiots, nobody was there because you didn't tell us you were going to be there. So please come back. And they say, okay, we'll come back. You know, sometime between 5 and 9:30, I think, was the time range I got. 9 o'clock, they call and say, nope, we can't make it, sorry. We'll be there tomorrow at a certain time, so we have to scramble to meet them on Saturday. And we have people waiting for them on Saturday. The guy finally shows up, messes around with something, and then just disappears. Gone. Leaves. And not only that, closes the ticket and says, you know, I fixed it. It's gone. The problem's over. And he didn't, because it didn't work. Not for a second. So this kind of nonsense went on back and forth, and it finally ended late Monday. And I'll tell you, this is what happens when you have a single entity controlling everything. And the problem is, even though we don't use Verizon as our provider, as the people that give us the T1, the people who do give us the T1 have to use Verizon for the end copper installation, whatever. And they told me, they said on the phone, you know, this happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
This happens all the time because we're actually competing with Verizon, and it's in Verizon's interest to really annoy the customer so that they wind up dropping us and using them. What kind of a system is this? This is insane. This is completely, totally crazy. We've gotten a lot of letters from people since we posted this saga on our website, and that's why we couldn't tell anybody about the Jack Delaney thing in Boston. Because we had no communication. It's that easy. Just take somebody off the net so that they can't communicate. It's really really kind of scary. Here's a letter from somebody who wrote in. After days of trying to get onto your website, I finally managed it, and I am not surprised to find out exactly why I couldn't access your site. This whole situation 2600 has been going through is really getting beyond a joke. How long are your free speech and basic civil rights going to be abused in this manner by power and money-crazed people?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that Verizon intentionally disconnected your T1
well,
to
you
prevent
know,
you from speaking out.
My view on that is, does it really matter if it was intentional or not? The effect is the same, whether it's through malice or incompetence. The fact of the matter is, we're so dependent on these idiots to do these things that if they spent more time, like I said before, if they spent more time on the network, less time threatening people, you know, who criticize them, then maybe these kinds of things wouldn't happen if it's incompetence. You know, or if it's something deliberate, then who knows? Who knows what's behind it? You'll never find out, that's for sure. All I do know is that if we were Bloomberg or something like that, and this happened to us, you know, imagine being taken off the net for an hour if you're some big corporation. It's the headlines. You know, what is the difference? This is denial of service. It's denial of service in the other direction. You know, a big corporation on the other end just, you know, not providing service when they're supposed to, not fixing it when they're supposed to, and the people on the other end suffer. This happens all the time. But the people don't have a voice. So they suffer, nothing happens. Anyway, let me finish with the letter. Corporations, large or small, should not have the ability to wield such power over ordinary individual people or groups. Well, we're not ordinary, are we? I like to think
about that. Well, I'm generally regarded as strange, so...
Yeah. Anyway, they should be providing a decent service for a fair price, but instead they, along with others, are intent on fleecing the innocent public of all their money whilst suppressing them at the same time. What has gone wrong with the world? It's crazy. Recently, I came across an article on www.tomshardware.com, which details how to make a copy of a DVD for your own purposes. The article goes on to explain how to turn that copy into a DivX. At no point does it mention DECSS, because as most sensible people know, DECSS is not for copying DVDs. Anyway, has the MPAA brought an injunction against this site? Not that I'm aware of. That letter comes from Jinxter. Here's another letter. Just thought I would send you a couple of comments on your Verizon Sucks news. And by the way, VerizonReallySucks.com now points to that story, because now we've got a good story that fits the site.
Okay.
I feel your pain. The thing is, though, this doesn't just happen to you. I work at one of the largest real estate corporations in the U.S., and we get the same runaround that you guys do. Admittedly, we are not dealing with Verizon, but we have dealt with several providers, all of which provide pretty much the same crappy service. It recently took me over a month to bring one of our T1 WAN lines back up after it went down for some unexplained reason. Apparently, these providers go through such convoluted bureaucracy, they don't know what the other is doing. It seems the demand for these services is so huge right now that these companies can pretty much treat everybody, except for the biggest of the big corporations, however they like. This bit of knowledge was confided to me by one of the techs who was sent out to fix our line after I vented my frustration upon him. And that's just it.
Yeah,
you know,
leave the techs alone. You know, they're doing the best they can. They just get issued marching orders.
I don't know about the guy was, like, smoking in our basement, you know, just having a coffee break and then leaving without telling anybody what he did. That's I like to vent some frustration.
Well, the guy who was there when I was there was very nice. He knew what was going on, and he didn't leave until the thing was
okay, working. But here's the other thing, all right? The company that we did have to deal with, we had to deal with them. We even called Verizon, and Verizon said, we're not allowed to talk to you. We have to talk to the other company. We can't talk to the customer. We don't do that. We don't talk to the customer. So the other company said, you know, well, you know, it's Verizon's fault. We've, you know, it's not our problem. And you have to tell them, well, look, you know, if we can't talk to Verizon, you're going to get the brunt of it. Because, you know, with these stupid rules, if we're not allowed to talk to the people responsible, we have to go to the step below that. And that's you, so it's your fault. That's how you have to do it. Who are you going to vent your frustration on? Nobody? You know, the family dog? What? Who gets it? You know, somebody has to be held accountable when things like this happen. 5 days off the net.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's it? We're just supposed to forget about it? No, these things happen. And what was the problem in the end? It was a card that had to be replaced. A card that they say was flaky. A flaky card. Well, it should have been the first thing they did. And in fact, they replaced it with another flaky card.
It was a twofold problem. I mean, there was an issue downstairs where the copper became separated because they were doing work at some other point.
I doubt the two things happened at the exact same moment,
though. Well, one probably caused the other.
Well, probably. All right, that's possible. But still, these things happen all the time. You know, they should be able to figure it out.
Also, keep in mind that Verizon is primarily a company that has dealt in voice, where you have a pair of copper going everywhere, and somebody picks up the phone, and the most difficult thing they have to deal with is hiss on a line.
Mm-hmm.
And in the age of digital communications, the slightest pop winds up completely destroying everything.
Yeah, but you see, Isaac, the age of digital communications has been upon us now for about a decade, and I think they've had enough time. And certainly, you know, laying off all the people they've laid off, maybe they should hire some of them back, you know, to help them out since they're so short-staffed. That's always the complaint I hear. Oh, there's just not enough people. Well, you know, you guys are making enough money with all the automation, all the people you're laying off. Maybe they should hire some more people that can do this kind of thing. It's no excuse to wait 5 days to get your service back. You know, you should have the same quality of service to everybody. Either lousy service for everybody or good service for everybody, but not, you know, the privileged few. As the head of tech support...
Planning on billing them for your downtime?
How do I do that?
Send them a bill.
send them a bill. I might as well just send bills to everybody. I mean, come on, no one's going to take that seriously. And I'll probably get indicted for fraud for sending a bill that they didn't sign up for.
You were down. You were denied service. This is how much money you lost. You demand that they provide you with that.
You think that's a good idea?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, let's work on it after the show.
Okay.
I bet they
seem to know what you're talking about here. We'll pursue it.
I bet they have fine print that prohibits.
They're not responsible?
We're not responsible for anything.
So they ignore the letter. That'll make you feel better.
No, it won't. It'll make me feel angry because they're going to ignore me, and I'm just going to get even angrier. I'm pretty angry as it is.
You can send some more letters after that.
As the head of tech support for a local ISP, I can both sympathize and empathize with you. My days would be so much more pleasant if, on the one hand, I wasn't listening to their bad hold music for hours on end, fully knowing that my time was being wasted, or on the other, if I wasn't getting my ass removed by an irate customer because Verizon wouldn't, couldn't, or didn't fix their service in a timely fashion, if at all. And,
hold music isn't that bad.
I don't know.
You know, I once called a customer service so-called number somewhere, mm-hmm. and they told me how important my call was to them, and then hung up on me because they were too busy. They couldn't even bother to put me on hold.
Here's another letter. This is interesting. First off, a quick request. If you do decide to publish this letter, please withhold my email address. Oh, we usually give out email addresses on the air, don't we?
Darn.
Anyway, this comes from... I can't pronounce this. X-A-K-E-P. What kind of... How do you pronounce that? I can't pronounce that.
I don't
X-A-K-E-P. X-A-K-E-P. There aren't even countries in the most remote part of the mountainous region of some crazy place that have names like that.
Zaka.
This is like Star Wars type names of planets where, you know.
Maybe it's something else backwards.
I don't know. At any rate, I work. I think this is where the inspiration for the name came from. I work in the IXCQAAG group for AT&T. All right, whatever.
Okay.
That means that we deal with situations like yours every day, and I can tell you that your downtime was probably deliberate. A bad smart jack card, RJ48C or X, can be tested remotely in a matter of seconds. I know. I loop them up and down every day. Mm-hmm. If it's bad, they will know. Odds are that your circuit had its X/Cs deleted in the network between you and the backbone and were not restored until the higher-ups said to fix it. Go ahead and raise hell about this and get the word out. This was an attack on the press. There is no excuse for actions like this. On the upside, it means that someone is afraid of you. Well, we've always known that. And they are willing to risk an obvious public black eye to shut you up. Again, please do not make my information public. Okay, well, obviously this person doesn't want to go on the record any more than that. But
I still don't think they like went down and yanked a wire out of the board.
I have my doubts, too. But these days, you know, there's a lot of nasty stuff going on. And this kind of thing, you know, I don't know which is worse, this kind of incompetence or this kind of maliciousness. Whatever it is, the effect is the same, and it shut us up for 5 days. And we really should have some kind of backup system, I guess, so that we can't do this. So we're open to ideas on that.
If you want to work on that, you talk to me after the show about that, too.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the backup systems is that usually, you know, when you need them the most, somehow they fail for whatever reason. I've known that. There's so many letters on this. We can't get into all the letters because we just have too many. But another thing which just happened as well, which I found to be fascinating. Do you remember the Book of World Records?
Guinness Book of World Records?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, they have a TV show now.
Well, that's lovely, but that's not what I'm getting at. The article they wrote in 1999 on Kevin Mitnick, being the most notorious hacker in the world.
Yeah.
All that kind of nonsense.
Did they retract it?
Interesting side note to that story. There was so much wrong with it that I won't even get into the story. It was very short. It was only a paragraph, but there was enough for us to write several paragraphs of corrections for that one thing that they wrote. And keep in mind, this was when Kevin was still in prison, and bad press was really not a good thing to have happen. So what we did was we put up a parody site. We called it the same thing that they call their sites, GuinnessRecords.com, except ours had one N instead of two N's. And so and it happened immediately. As soon as we put that page up, we were watching the logs. Within 20 minutes, somebody wandered into the site. And, you know, you'd have to be a real cretin not to know that that was a parody site, because it's just obvious. And there's a link also to the real site.
Real site.
Well, here we are, almost 2 years later, and we get another legal threat, this time from Guinness Book of World Records people, saying that... that we are not authorized to run this site.
Not authorized by who?
By them, really. What?
I'm still not following.
Well, basically saying that that our running the site is a violation of their trademark, that we're fooling people, and of course on this whole WIPO, you know, cyber squatter,
well, that's a different story.
WTO world that we live in now, that they can order us to take the site down, and you know, it was one of the nice letters that we got because they offered to pay us for the site. They offered to pay us for, you know, for the whole 2 years that we've had it, in fact. Which, you know, most of Verizon really sucks from us. They didn't ask for, you know, they said, give it to us. We're not going to pay you anything. You must give it to us. And these guys were nice. But here's the thing, okay? This is a matter of speech. This is a matter of parody. This is a matter of something that we have the right to do. At least, you know, in my eyes, obviously things are changing rapidly, and maybe we no longer have that right. But parodies exist all over the place. And lots of times, we put up an article about this today. There's all kinds of parody things that go on out there, you know, fake commercials, fake advertisements. And we put up a bunch of examples of this on our site to show this. In fact, there was this past week, there was an Olympic site, www.olympisc.com. That's if you know, twisted the last two letters around. And that diverted you someplace else where you were entered into a poll on, you know, should we destroy the internet, yes or no, or something crazy like that. Just, you know, a poll, an opinion poll. And obviously
the Olympics... Well, goes further to parody than that.
Well, yeah, basically, this is something that is always has always been permitted, has always been, you know, a valid form of expression. So what we did was we made it even more obvious. Not that I think we had to do this, but just, you know, as a show of good faith, we made it painfully obvious that when you go to GuinnessRecords.com with one N, it's a parody site. If you want to go to the real site, this is how you do it. But listen, this is what we are saying. This is our speech, and we're saying it for a reason. We also made an offer that if these guys want to publicly retract the story, we'll give it to them as a gift, because then the site will have served a purpose, and we will no longer need it. So we'll see what they do. But... you know, I'm just sick of all these threats all the time. Whenever you, I mean, even Ralph Nader is getting the same thing with it. He gave up this MasterCard ad. It's like the ad we run, not an ad, a promo we run on our station here. I don't know if you hear occasionally Robert Knight doing a whole thing about how NBC viewers, I don't know, are worth like a whole bunch of millions of dollars or something like that, but BAI listeners are priceless.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, they are.
Well, they are.
Absolutely are. But it was a, you know, it's a mock thing. It takes something that everybody has heard and uses it in a different way. Well, Ralph Nader did the same thing, saying, you know, an audience with Ralph Nader is priceless, something like that. MasterCard is suing him for this, saying that he's using their name. I mean, let me read the story here. Ralph Nader labeled MasterCard's lawsuit against the Nader 2000 campaign as an absurd and clumsy abuse of corporate power. In an attempt to suppress political speech, MasterCard filed its suit in U.S. District Court, the Southern District of New York, that's our district, charging that a Nader spot entitled Priceless Truth infringed upon the corporation's trademark and copyright of its credit card advertising campaign. Nader said, "Our advertisement is a parody and fair political speech. It does not infringe on the MasterCard trademark or copyright. MasterCard is taking itself a little too seriously, and in typical corporate style is trying not only to dominate the credit card industry through dual governance inside the marketplace, but the arena of free speech and the free flow of creative ideas in the political arena. They should lighten up. They're taking their name Master too seriously. This is America." Nader said the most outlandish charge was the lawsuit's claim that the campaign advertisement's purpose was, and this is great, to deceive, mislead, and confuse consumers and the purchasing public into believing that Ralph Nader, and specifically his candidacy, is in some way connected with MasterCard.
What?
"Let me assure MasterCard's executives that the last thing I want consumers to believe is that my campaign is in the business of selling credit cards," Nader said. "Indeed, on June 30th, I issued a call for the enactment of a credit card bill of rights to protect consumers from the excesses of the credit card industry. It would be hard for anyone to take seriously MasterCard's allegations that some people might be confused that the company is endorsing this campaign, especially when the spot says paid for by the Nader 2000 Primary Committee Incorporated. Moreover, anybody with access to the Internet could learn that MasterCard recently made soft money donations to the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committees. Comedic highlight," Nader continued, "of MasterCard's complaint is paragraph 25, wherein plaintiff asserts that the purpose of this television spot was to connect in some way with MasterCard to enable me to take advantage of the famous reputation and goodwill enjoyed by MasterCard. This claim is worthy of Saturday Night Live. I believe credit card charges are an outrageous fleecing of consumers, leading to invasions of consumer privacy, and are used by too many merchants who threaten damage to credit ratings to stifle legitimate consumer complaints.
He's going to be on Saturday Night Live.
He is?
This Saturday.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow, I know he was on before, because they showed that video after the Nader rally, and he was on there in the 70s or something.
He's going to be on again.
Wow. He's really making a lot of appearances. But... I was fun. What do you think? You were up there at the Nader rally, and I tell you, political rallies kind of scare me though, because there's so much cheering going on. You know, I always am scared when people are cheering that much. I mean, it was nice, you know.
Yeah.
They were saying cool things, but still, it's just, you know, it was. Anytime I'm in a stadium with people cheering, I get scared. Baseball games too.
Baseball games scare you?
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. Well, if you've seen the way the Yankees are playing lately, you'd be scared.
Well, hey, you know.
But what did you think of the whole campaign thing?
I thought it was good. There were 12,000 people in a room all listening to intelligent things. And
yeah.
You don't find that all
you
that often.
You snuck up in the front. We managed to get in the front. I always do this. It's pretty cool. Anyway, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900 if you have comments on the political debates. In quotes and italics and underline and all that kind of thing. If you have anything to say about Verizon, if you have anything to say about the latest legal threats against us, and is there anything else we forgot to update people on? There's always so many things going on. I leave here every week realizing that I forgot something major.
Rijndal.
Huh?
Well, it's actually pronounced Rijndal. Heard about this?
Tell me.
Ah, yesterday, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, declared its final AES candidate, the Advanced Encryption Standard, which is supposed to replace DES, DES.
Okay.
And the winner is Rijndal, spelled R-I-J-N-D-A-E-L. It's fairly obvious this was not, you know, made in this country. A couple of Belgian folks, very talented individuals, came up with this algorithm. I was kind of rooting for two fish, but Rijndal was the winner. And it's now being put to Secretary of Commerce, and they're going to try and get it in as the new standard for encryption in the U.S. government.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
This is a good thing.
Okay, well, I'm not used to very, very many of those.
A couple years of peer review have come down to this.
Actually, I heard something else yesterday about the Kinectix case.
Kinectix case?
Yeah, the, what was it, Supreme Court is...
the soft PlayStation?
Yeah. That's a case that's very similar to ours. With the whole, is this a story on it?
No.
Oh, so you distract me with a story on something else.
Mm-hmm.
This is a case that has something that's very similar to the 2600 case as far as reverse engineering goes. The whole Sony Kinectix thing. And what was it? Supreme Court said they're not going to hear it? Is that it? So that's a good thing, meaning that since they won the last round, it won't be appealed in the Supreme Court.
Not bad.
Yeah, but I haven't heard much press on this. If anybody knows more about that, please call in and tell us.
Well, if you're interested in Rijndal, you want to go to www.nist.gov/AES.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
With those words, we go to the phones. Now, I should tell everybody out there the rebel ban is still in effect, right? And
were we able to...
That was, yeah.
That was him?
Mike said that was him as well.
Okay.
And
pull out the old book here.
Yeah, we were at...
19 January.
We were at 19
we
January.
Were at,
so now we have to add an additional month to that, so we're all the way into February now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 16 January.
Oh, okay.
And another 4 weeks is, let's see, 23, 30, 6, 13. 13th of February.
Okay, 13th of February.
Would be, well, I'm sorry, the 20th of February.
All right.
Would be when
if you
want
to hear the voice of Rebel, you must come to the 2600 meeting on Friday. That's the only way you can hear it. Not here, though. And
that's not right.
Well, it's right that we spare the listeners this nonsense for any longer. All right, let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, brothers. How are you?
Okay.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to hear your show because whether you know it by design or otherwise, you always bring up some great social policy issues.
And we stumble into them occasionally.
Yeah, most particularly the economic issues and what bigness and largeness and greatness really does in terms of being oppressive and abusive to consumers. And in this regard, although it is not my intention to to vote for Ralph Nader, because I think it's a little disingenuous to jump in the 11th hour. No one can gainsay that his contribution to individual families that have had to suffer under severe consumer abuses, and I have a 20-year history in consumer protection legislation, from the credit cards, the landlord-tenant security deposits, to bait-and-switch advertising, etc., to the Pinto, etc., which takes a little bit back further than 25 years, but nevertheless, with General Motors and some of the big concerns that he has taken on, and he is, in my opinion, the people's presidential candidate at this juncture. It's just that if you're going to undertake this, do it with some seriousness, with the great lead time that you need. But Ralph Nader has made an exceptional contribution to society, which is exactly the standard by which these contrived debate commissions ought to ascertain, once they get independent of political interest, that a person would be deserving to participate in a national debate. So I love that you keep up the technical aspect, but I also love that you do the great service of bringing these issues of monopoly, that you take the flack, and that it's making an awareness about just the sinister nature, the bullyish nature, the bloodthirsty nature of large economic concerns, and most particularly with the advent of the WTO, which, if you incidentally may have seen a buried article in the bottom of the second New York Times, where the WTO, you see, has threatened $5 billion in sanctions against the United States of America if it does not change its tax laws so that subsidies cannot be given to its companies. And this is exactly what the Americans don't really understand. These people deal so stealthily that they don't understand that here's a group of basically right-wingers with a lot of money who have winnowed their way into the American tax policy to say to our Congress that you have to change your tax laws or else, without our having a even breath of the fact that the issue is even pending. So keep doing these things, keep fighting, brothers. I believe that you're on the precipice of building a consciousness that's really going to make a difference with the younger generation. I'm an old war horse. I fought this. The baton got dropped because they put the fascists between the Kennedy era and whenever the next connect is. That happens for African Americans, Asian Americans, but they assassinated them all. The killers. Okay. The murderers. So don't think that they won't attack you, destroy your reputation. They are murderers throughout the world. That is their history. That's not a conspiracy theory. So keep it up, because that's what they've done. It was no African-American who killed Kennedy, you see. It was no African-American that killed King. It was no African-American that killed Salvador Allende. And for this country not to live up to its murderous contemporary history now means that the very people who enjoy these benefits, enjoy the benefits of their hard-working ancestors, are now about to be deposed of the very freedoms and liberty for which their ancestors, all of our ancestors, have died. So keep these issues in front of the public and keep rapping.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
I think a lot of people, though, when we say people don't understand these things, a lot of times it's because people aren't exposed to the ideas. You know, you say people don't realize about what the WTO is doing with, $5 billion threats if we don't change our tax code. Well, who's going to tell you that? You know, the same companies that are pushing it because they own the media? No, of course not. You have to go to independent sources, and you have to listen. Are you finished groaning into the microphone, Isaac?
Well, that's 5 minutes of my life I'm never going to get back now.
Oh, well, you just keep making me feel better then. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, gentlemen, that man who just called, just as a side note, every time he calls quite a few shows, and every time he does, he always stops. I always start to think a little differently about life after I hear him speak.
Uh-huh.
In what way?
Isaac's thinking about ending his life after...
No, I'm not.
Well, he's obviously, for lack of a better word, a learned man who's got quite a few years of experience, and he gives me an insight on different issues, and even though he talks about different things, he still comes down...
But different perspectives scare people. You know, that's why we have to be shielded from different perspectives all the time.
That's true. Well, I only listen to BAI so much before I go back to the regular network.
Yeah, hurry up. Go back to the commercial networks because, you know, who knows what's going to happen to your brain if you stick around here too long.
What I wanted to say, a very short comment, on the other non-commercial station, 820 WNYC, sometime in late spring, in wake of one of those viruses that crashed the Yahoo site or just the I Love You, they did a piece on hackers, and it was going pretty much the way most pieces go, so it was kind of in the background for me.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, in the middle of the piece, they jumped to a guy they were about to interview, a hacker, and they started playing the music that you hear at the beginning of your show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and as soon as it jumped, I go, what the hell? I go, that sounds familiar. And then I forget the guy's name, but I don't think if you guys are hearing about it for the first time, obviously nobody on the show is interviewed, but I was just shocked why they would pick that particular music.
You mean our theme?
Yeah, dent, you know, right at the beginning of the show.
Well, that's an off-the-hook tone, so that's really not our theme, but the two together would be our theme. But, you know, that's okay. We don't mind. It's I guess it's fair use if you want to, you know, call it that.
But I figure you guys are the only one who ever had that piece. I don't know who else would have access to it unless they pulled it off of your air.
That's wasp. If they used the exact same recording, yeah, they would have had to. But that's okay. You know, if people want to, you know, spread the word in whatever way they can, as long as they don't say bad things that aren't true and you know, credit them to us somehow.
Oh, they said nothing about your show. It was just the music was the same, which I found very coincidental,
uh-huh.
If a coincidence at all.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, it just gets annoying when someone comes up to you and says, you're using their theme, you know, when it's our theme. When someone comes up to me and says, Emmanuel Goldstein, you named yourself after that kid in the film. You know, that it can be kind of
Emmanuel,
funny
let me ask
at the
you
same
something.
Time. Yes.
For, that name for years sounded familiar for years, and I was, you know, I read 1984, and I saw the movie, and that name jumped out at me again.
Uh-huh.
You obviously have a real name. Is it common knowledge, or is it a secret?
No, it's not common knowledge, but it's a name. It's a name that is a lot more sounding like a name. But it's out there. No, you can definitely
find out.
What,
this name sounds less like a name?
Well, no, common knowledge. He asked if my name is
Common knowledge.
That's like a handle.
Oh, I see.
But
actually,
yeah, hopefully that can be helpful to you, sir.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
That would not be a bad handle.
Well, you better hurry and get it, because I guarantee somebody's registering it right now.
Common
with the,
knowledge. That's not bad.
With the organization.
The International Handle Authority.
Yeah. All right. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, yes, and New Jersey Dale has an advertisement in the
Rebel.
I'm going to have to put this to Mark, aren't I?
All right, wait a second. Rebel, all right, look, it's okay. The band's off, all right? You can talk. Talk in your normal voice.
Oh, good. New Jersey Dale has...
All right, add another month.
Well, hey.
That makes it... No, that, I'm allowed to do that. Look it up. I'm allowed to do that.
But you tricked him.
I tricked him. He's not supposed to be calling up. I got him to admit it was him. Add another month.
You said the band was off.
I said the band was off, and it was. For that moment, it was off. Now it's back on again. It's what, a five-month band, a six-month band? What is it?
Five now, I guess.
Five-month band, March.
Only in March.
Uh-huh. I get the feeling that our authority is just not being taken seriously around here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. Just as an aside, the person that sent the international email, XA, was it? XAKEP?
Uh-huh.
That is written in Cyrillic. It was written down in Cyrillic. It's hacker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's incredible that you would know that.
Just a thought.
Wait, is it a thought or is it a fact?
Oh, it's true. I mean, that is it in Cyrillic. But, you know, as you were spelling it, I was thinking, hacker, you know.
See, that just goes to show BAI listeners will be able to, you know, uncover any fact.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
That's what we mean when we say they're priceless and MasterCard can go screw themselves.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I was asking also, I just wanted to ask whether or not you were appealing that decision. What's happening with that?
Yes. The appeal is going forward. In fact, we had a very impassioned discussion about it today, you know, as far as just how we're going to be moving forward. And believe me, we're moving forward. We really are. Not yet, but it will be as soon as we know something, you know, you'll after talking to all the people at Harvard, you know, after being there and talking to Jack Vellante, so many people came up saying, you know, you've got to go through with this, you've got to appeal. A lot of people are watching this, and, you know, it's going to be overturned at some point. And it's really heartening to see so many people that are following this, that are into this. I'm always surprised by how many people know about it and how it keeps popping up. You know, in this month's Harper's Magazine, do you guys see this? They reprinted some of the Jack Vellante testimony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
most of that.
That's great.
It's the October edition of Harper's. And, in fact, it's on the... is that on the front page?
Very good. And also, the what happened to your line, I totally believe that it was intentional.
Yeah, well, you know.
Everything they do, every phone call that they add to your bill is intentional.
At this point, it's kind of late to even think about, you know, why it happened. Now, the question I want to ask is, what do we do now?
Yes, that's right. That's what I was getting to. I guess you pay monthly or yearly or something. Just subtract it. Don't bill them. Just
subtract. But you see, no, we pay the provider, and the provider is great. We have no complaints with them. They're amazing people. But but you know, they're the ones that would be hurt if we did something like that. Actually, we'd probably be hurt because they'd probably pull the T1 if we did that.
And Verizon.
Another bill that's a Verizon bill.
We just have to, I think what we're doing now is probably the best thing, letting people know about it and giving people a way to vent, and maybe that will lead to some changes. We'll wait for a response from Verizon. Hopefully it won't be a legal threat because we're criticizing them. Anyway, as far as the Harper's thing goes, that is on page, well, it starts on page 15. It's called Jack Valente on DVD Piracy. And this magazine is great because they always reprint things that are particularly interesting that a lot of people might have missed. And let me find the actual... Digital Millennium Thought Crimes. It's on page 28. It's from the deposition of Jack Valente, blah, blah, blah. And basically it just goes on for several pages. Mr. Valente, who are the members of the DVD Copy Control Association? I don't know. Have you ever met anybody at the DVD CCA? Not that I'm aware of. I'll just read Valente's answers. Not that I'm aware of, no. No, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. No, 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 not that I'm aware of. I'm not aware of any discussions I've had. That's one of my favorites. Not really. I don't recall. No, I don't. No, I don't recall. I don't recall. I'm not aware. That's a good synonym. I'm not. That's the first statement he actually made, the whole thing. Well, actually, the synonym was Marty Garber saying, when you say you're not aware, does that mean you don't know? That's a good synonym. Continuing with Valente's responses, I'm not aware of any. I don't know. I don't know. Great composer. I love his music. That, of course, was in response to Marty Garber saying, do you know who Mr. Schumann is? And he wasn't talking about the composer. He was talking about someone else. I do not know him. What kind of pirates? No, a lot. Okay, it just goes on for a couple more pages. And after that is a discussion between representatives of the Motion Picture Association of America Ratings Board and Paramount Pictures concerning the rating of the movie South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. We can't read that on the air because they're going into some specific graphic things as to why it was getting an NC-17 rating and what they had to do to fix it. So it's really interesting, and I hope people pick that up. Let's go to another phone call. Yes, go ahead.
At the thing in Boston, he was asked about another suit that he testified in or did something, the Motion Picture Association, and he had never heard of the company.
He had no idea. Yeah, he didn't know what he had testified in. He says, this is the first time hearing it. Well, you know, yeah, I think he said he had to talk to his press agents about just what they're saying that he did. I don't know. It was comical. If it wasn't so sad, it would be funny. And a lot of people are suffering as a result. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please. Sounds like long distance. Yes, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from San Francisco, California.
That is.
I got the other phone here. I was jeopardizing two of your lines.
Okay.
I'm calling to comment about the letter that you received from the guy in the InterExchange Carrier Customer Support Group about your little dilemma with your T1.
Uh-huh. Sounds like you're in a busy room like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually in a switch room right now.
See,
so,
I can tell these things.
I work for a little phone company. Actually,
wow.
A pretty big one. But anyway.
Okay.
While it does seem odd you were down for 5 days, that kind of thing does happen. I'm out here with Pacific Bell, and it happens all the time. What I would do if I were you is request. Actually, you can legally demand the log from the trouble ticket and see if any first levels got involved, because I guarantee you none of the craft, none of the actual employees that are doing the work care enough about, you know, 2600 and the whole thing going on to subvert you guys by killing your T1.
Right.
So look from the very beginning and see if there was a first level or second level escalation, or if it was initiated by somebody like that and they actually said, hey, you know, don't send an FMAC out here to work out on that. Don't send an NTAC out to that office to work on this.
Would they actually log something like that, saying don't send somebody out?
Well, they have to log absolutely everything. So if, you know, I'm Jane, the lady at ICMC, and I'm sitting there typing in the log, I got to type, my boss said, don't do this. They have to log absolutely everything. Now, the part that he put in his little note about your X/Cs are cross-connects in a DAX, a digital access cross-connect system.
Mm-hmm.
So your cross-connects might have been killed, but there are other sneakier ways of doing it. Now, the NIU, the circuit pack that they replaced,
yes.
If this is a DSL line, like you guys said it was?
No, it's a T1.
T1
it's
HDSL.
It's a full T1, so it's not HDSL?
They replaced a pair gain card.
Okay. A lot of the cities like New York, like San Francisco, that have old established plant, crappy plant, that they can salvage, use HDSL packs, HDSL circuit packs on those. I mean, they're notorious out here for going bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'll work for months at a time and just take a dump on you.
They just go flaky.
Yeah, they just go completely flaky. So that could have been it. 5 days is totally unacceptable.
How about guy showing up, replacing it, and leaving without testing it?
That's totally normal.
He didn't replace it.
that's normal?
He claims he
changed it.
No, the first guy who showed up was only in the basement.
That's not true. You weren't there.
I do the same things every day. They'll show up, and if the LCON, the location contact, isn't there, they roll immediately. Right around the corner to a bar, but then they say they're gone, and you get charged for the call out, and you have to pay. Fortunately, in your case, since you're ordering it through somebody else, you probably don't get charged for it. But since you're going through somebody else, you also literally they won't talk to you. They cannot talk to you. For instance, if one of our customers orders a T1, and it's in trouble, and they call us, we have to tell them, sorry, call Bell. We can't call them.
Mm-hmm.
We can't talk to Bell.
Yep.
It's the same thing out here now. Unfortunately, also, you can't charge them for your downtime. It's all in the tariffs.
Amazing.
Read the tariffs.
It's amazing.
You cannot charge them for anything. But it was weird. 5 days is unacceptable. I've only dealt with probably two other T1s that were down like that for 5 days in about a decade of doing this stuff.
And this is the third time in 6 weeks that we've gone down for more than a day because of something like this.
Yeah. Now, Verizon is notoriously, problematic, but still, 5 days is unacceptable. I would get that log. It'll probably be difficult. You'll have to go through your service provider, who will have to say, wow, we've never done this before, and then go to Verizon, go through the process, get the log, find out. You'll have to find out who every single person is on the log because their names aren't on there.
Uh-huh.
It's usually an employee ID or technician ID. So it'll be a long and arduous process, but if you see, oh, gee, what's this first level doing intervening right here on our behalf when we didn't escalate to a first level, we didn't request a first level even take a look at it. That would mean that a first level was informed by his second level, and you know how the managers go, right? First level, second level, and so forth.
Right.
That would mean that a first level was informed by his second level, hey, let's take 2600 down for the weekend, and that way they can't get the word out. But something to take a look at. It is weird. 5 days is totally unacceptable. Write letters to the PUC. Write letters to everybody.
Good idea. Thanks. Thanks for the advice.
Yeah, call back.
All right.
Well, we're going to pursue this and see just what we find out. It's good to have people know what they're talking about out there. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in one more phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to say a couple of things that the whole hacker thing, it's written sort of like it's Russian for hacker, but you already found that out. And also,
two listeners knew this. Wow, I'm impressed.
That's impressive.
And I also found out that Ralph Nader is going to be in New York on Saturday, I believe, at Hunter College.
Yes.
He's going to be there at 12 noon. I don't know if, normal people are going to be able to go in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, call the city campaign office, 353-3111. They should know.
Area code 212.
Yes.
Okay. All right, cool. Thanks thanks for the call.
All right, that's about it.
All right.
Bye.
I guess we can probably squeeze in one more. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel, Tommy Pickles.
Hey, how you doing?
Listen, quick one. Did you get your sympathy card? Verizon sent out these sympathy cards.
Verizon sent out sympathy cards?
Printed out on Hallmark, especially for Verizon.
Uh-huh.
Having you as a customer means a great deal to us, and we strive to provide blah, 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 and they go on. And we look forward to serving you in the future. The last line of their paragraph, though, was, we're sorry for any interruptions or delays you experienced during the strike.
Oh, the strike.
Fake signature on it, fake address on the front.
The strike was nothing. The strike was nothing compared to normal operations.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
amazing. The last caller said that Verizon is notoriously bad, and
they've only been around
a couple of months.
I was going to point that out.
Yeah, exactly, and they sent around sympathy cards to the New Yorker. So,
oh, wow.
Funny and hysterical. Also, I know this week is the meeting, so anyone who wants any info on Freaknik, November 3rd through the 5th down in Nashville, Tennessee, hoping to see 2,600 out
yes,
there.
Yes, I haven't even thought about that, but we definitely have to start thinking about it.
Yeah, so I'll be at the meeting, you know, what I look like, and we'll gather at a table and we'll talk out plans and stuff. I'm doing the streaming media down there this year.
Okay,
with
great.
The Moloch.org crew, and we'll be down there.
Okay. Hey, thanks for calling.
Yep. Bye.
And the meeting, of course, yeah, the meeting takes place this Friday, Citicorp Center, 53rd Street between Lex and Park Avenue. No, between Lexington and 3rd Avenue, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And it runs from 5 to 8 p.m. Just follow all the security guards. That's where we are. And, yes, look in the back of 2600 Magazine for meetings in your city or country, first Friday of the month, every month. We'll be back again next week with another action-packed edition of Off the Hook. You can
Without
write
Rebel.
To us. Without Rebel, yeah, unfortunately. Sorry. OTH at 2600.com is our email address. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
I would like to give a shout out to all the prisoners throughout the world.
The prison system is out of control, and people you love are living under conditions that no one deserves. Why not let them know you care by sending them a message over the airwaves with WBAR's Prisoner Shoutout Line, broadcasting your voice every Thursday morning at 6:45. Do you have a loved one behind bars and you haven't called? Pick up the phone and dial 212-209-2958. That's the Prisoner Shoutout Line, 212-209-2958.
Miss you so much at home, man. I really do, man. Stay strong, brother, man. Daddy loves you. Stay strong, and we'll be all right.